This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pleasure.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is indeed Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, my producer, Lee Delapina. We are in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and welcome everybody joining us across North America on Sirius 220 XM 206, and of course, all of you listening worldwide with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. This is an exciting week for the Horse Racing Radio Network. If you didn't catch it last night, the very first Jock Talk show ever hosted here on the network. It's a brand new show. We debuted last night. You can catch it every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 Eastern Time. Of course, that show streams exclusively on our website, horseracingradio.net. Mike Smith was our Hall of Fame guest last night on the program, and it was so much fun to hear his story. You can go back to our website, listen to a podcast at your leisure, and of course, you can also do that on iTunes as well. Now, we have been hosting this Trainer Talk show for, nearly 2 years now, and it has been such a delight for me to sit here each week and hear the stories of so many of the people that helped to make our sport a success, and you know I'm talking about the trainers when I say that, and tonight's show will be much along those same lines. I'm going to talk with trainer David Rakoff in the first part of the show, and then I will be joined by Michael Ferraro in the second half of the program. And it's interesting, when you look at the two careers, David just getting started with his own training career, whereas Michael's been doing it for quite some time. Michael's won more than 3,000 races. David has one win, that coming in the last race at Gulfstream Park on December 7th, but don't let that fool you. David is no stranger to the backside barn area, and when you hear the story behind that first winner, you'll understand just how special that moment really was. David, welcome to the show. Happy to have you on board.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
You know, not only was that win your first win as a trainer, which is always really special, but when your two-year-old filly, Petit Lapin, crossed the line first, it had a much more significant meaning for you, didn't it?
Yes, it did. See, I was with a longtime trainer, Fred Warren, and he had passed away October 3rd, and I had to take over all the duties. You know, by the time I got my workman's comp and everything, was November 3rd when I really actually started training under my name. And see, you know, all the hard work we've done over the years with Fred, and to see a horse, you know, he was my mentor, and he was a good friend. And to see that horse pass the finish line, just everything came together right then.
Wow.
And we won that, you know.
Yeah, and I guess I had read that Fred was 80 years old when he passed away on October 3rd, and it kind of came out of left field, didn't it? It was very sudden.
Yeah, we just we had driven up to Ocala for the sales, and as soon as we got up there, he said he wasn't feeling well. He wanted to go to rest. I said, well, if you want, you know, we'll go take you back to the hotel. I'll come back. He said, no, he'll just rest a little bit. We ended up driving back home to Miami. You know, when he slept, he called me, he said he felt a little better. I told him, you better go to the doctor. The doctor checked, put him right in the hospital. 2 days later, he's in a unit. He never came out.
Wow.
So it was kind of a big shock, you know. He's there 1 minute. It's like every day I'm sitting there with him at the track, you know. And like I said, I've known him a long time, and I started working there with him. And it was just, really, it was unbelievable.
Well, Fred Warren isn't a household name in thoroughbred racing like Todd Pletcher, Nick Zito, Bill Mott. But when you look at his career, David, he trained nearly 1,100 winners, and his career began in the mid-1970s. Fred knew how to train a good horse.
Oh, yeah. He started the first year Calder opened in 71. He had Barn 25. As a matter of fact, I'm still in Barn 25.
Wow.
He's been there since 1971. And, yeah, he's just a local-based Calder trainer. You know, we go to Calder, Gulfstream, Hialeah, never really ship out anywhere.
What
down here in South Florida know about Fred Warren.
Yeah, what type of person was Fred to be around every day at the racetrack, David?
Well, I'll tell you, he had a big heart, but you had to know Fred. Because Fred always said what was on his mind, whether it was, you know, something you should say or shouldn't. But if you knew Fred, you knew he didn't mean it in a bad way. And once you got to know him, like you might meet him and hate him, once you got to know him, you'd love him. Everybody loved him. He never turned anybody away when they needed help. He was just a guy with a big heart. When they said they broke the mold when they made him, I truly believe that.
When did your relationship with Fred begin?
Well, I met him in 1984. A friend of mine got into horses with some of his friends, and he couldn't do it. He asked me if I wanted to take over. So I said, you know, just 10% of a couple of horses. So I said, okay, Fred happened to be the trainer. So I met him then, but, you know, we didn't really hang out. We're friends, and I didn't work there at the time. And it's went on like that. And then after a couple of years, that dissolved. But I still saw Fred once in a while. Then I was out of it a couple of years, went back to school. Then I wanted to get some horses, and I talked to Fred. And we never looked back. I started, you know, we got a partnership. We bought 1 2-year-old and started, and then... I wanted to learn. So he wasn't there. I just worked hot walk, and I wanted to learn the grooming. I learned all that. And then, I always started helping him out, you know, on the training aspect. He was showing me everything. Like, he's a hell of a mentor. He's taught you everything. He said that, you know, he's been in the business 45 years. He learns something new every day.
You know, I was going to ask you that. Outside of the hands-on elements that you learned in working with Fred, what were some of the more valuable lessons that he taught you, maybe about the business or being involved with training?
Well, he takes good care. Most important to him was the horses. He, you know, take good care of horses. You know, he was always very honest about something. If something wrong, he tells the owner. He was the type of guy, he always said, he'd rather make a little money all the time with a guy than make chunk early with a one time and the guy never talked to him again type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
He was just a very honest person, and he wanted to do good for the trip, for the owners, not just for himself. And he would take it personal when a horse didn't run any good, too. You know, he'd take it hard. He really was devoted to training. He loved training.
You know, his best year was in 1983. He had 67 winners that year. Were you around him at that point, or was that still too early?
Yeah, that was a little early. I wasn't with him at that point.
Okay.
And I know he was leading wins in Tampa for a long time. I think it was like 42 or 44. It was broken a few years ago with 70 or 80, and then they keep breaking it now. But it stood for a long time.
Well, I can imagine when that 2-year-old filly crossed the finish line last week, that had to mean the world to you. It had to be highly emotional.
Yeah, it was pretty emotional. I just... you know, about him and to get that monkey off your back. I don't know. It just seemed like when he was in the hospital and things were going, it just, you know, we were still doing everything, but I don't know. It just felt different without him there. But it still feels like he's there every morning, you know. Nothing's changed. I don't even park in his parking space. I don't take his chair out. But I got all his gear up, you know, so everywhere you look, it reminds. And everybody at the racetrack knew him and loved him, and they still talk about him all the time, come up and ask him all the time about him.
Is it difficult coming to the barn every day and not having him there when you get there?
Well, in a way, it's difficult, but I've learned how to deal with things before, so, I mean, I take it better. But it's hard when you're there and you start thinking about it, or, you know, one of the owners call up, start talking about him, and still get a tear in my eye. Like the other day, I was talking about him to somebody that knew him, you know, that comes out to the races. You start getting a little tear in the eye.
Well, I know how much you wanted to win with one of Fred's horses, and you were 0-for-17 coming into that race last week. How frustrating were those first 17 trying to get over that hump and break through?
Well, it was a little frustrating, but I just took it one day at a time and try to just keep doing what I, you know what to do, and, you know, try to learn new things and just keep going. I didn't let it really get me down. And I just kept going, and I thought that Philly had a very good shot, but she was number 14, and there had to be two scratches, and being open the weekend at Gulfstream on the grass, I didn't think we were going to get in. When I saw that phone ring at 8:30 at Gulfstream Park, I picked it up. It was the stewards. I knew we were in. So I knew I had a good shot. So everything just had to go right that day, and it did.
Well, and I hope I'm saying her name correctly. I was going with Petite Lapin, but I know that her name means small rabbit in French, so I might be way off. Am I saying it correctly?
No, you're saying it correctly.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
Yeah, it's a tongue tire.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I thought it was interesting that since Fred's passing in October, you've raced Petite Lapin four times in a five-week period. Now, that's extremely old school with your approach to training. Talk about your philosophy with training horses a little bit, David.
Well, like every horse is different. Normally, you wouldn't do that, but she's a type of horse that right now that can handle that. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, a couple of times Gulfstream needed to fill a race, and they asked me, and I put her in, otherwise I wouldn't run. But some of these horses could go, some horses can run every week, some may not be able to run for 3 weeks. The horse comes back out of the race good in the morning, feeling good, he ate up, and everything's going good. And, you know, you walk them up 2, 3, 4 days, whatever it takes. You know, if they're ready to go, they're ready to go. It's just some horses are stronger than other, and like I said, every horse is different. Yeah, I don't treat every horse the same. I know a lot of people don't, but every single horse is different.
What are you looking for with a horse like this that tells you, hey, I'm doing great, I'm ready to get back to the track and race again? What are the things that she shows you that you're looking for?
Well, I just show, like, the next morning, like, I get to the track four every morning. I check the feed, you know, make sure they got water because it's hot down here in South Florida. And even though they got two buckets, some of them do drink a lot. And then make sure they're feeling good the next day, make sure they ate up. You know, walk them, see how they come out of the stall and walk in, and see how they're acting. And, you know, give them a few days, and when they go back to the track and start galloping again, they're looking good, you know, and they have enough time, they're ready. If not, it's like I said, some horses like that, some horses aren't. She's just the type of horse, and this horse, this filly, she's just getting better and better every time she runs. When I bought her from the sale and bought her back the first week, I just let her go an easy quarter mile, and she galloped out in 35. Right there, I said, this filly could run. So, you know, I didn't really rush her, but I bought her out of the June sale, so they've been in training. I ran her a couple months after I got her into Calder.
Talking with trainer David Rakoff on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Well, she's worked out really well for you now, David, and now that you're able to, as you said, get the monkey off your back. I thought it was interesting that after the race, I read a quote from you, and you said that you knew one day you would take over, but you were hoping it wouldn't be for another 10 years.
Oh, yeah, well, Fred thought he wasn't going to make it this far. Like 5 years ago, I bred a mare, and he didn't want to be partners. He said, I'll never see her get to the races. Well, she's had three babies, two have already been to the races. So he thought he'd never be here, and I know he's getting older. And, you know, I knew one day I'd have to take over, but I just was hoping he'd be around. You know, even a few people asked me, why don't you go off be on your own? I didn't want to. I'm doing fine with Fred. And That's what I meant by. I really, you know, it just came so sudden. I just thought he's going to be around for at least another 10 years.
Go back to the beginning with me a little bit here, David. How did you initially get hooked on racing, maybe as a child, or how did that happen?
Well, my dad had a couple horses in New York, like in the late 50s and early 60s. You know, I was born in 61. But I just remember back then I've always liked horses. And when my parents moved to New Jersey, to Cherry Hill, I was right near Garden State Racetrack. And I don't know, one day my friends and I said, let's cut school and go to the track. Because I've always liked horses. We all always liked horses.
Sure.
And like I said, I see my dad's old pictures and stuff. So we went there and I started, you know, betting. I didn't know a thing about it. I didn't know about not one is a two, not one is a three, other than I didn't know anything. All I know is I bet, I won a few times, and I really got hooked on the racing aspect. But, you know, I started with horses. And then I was in Jersey. I met this trainer, Norman St. Leon, Atlantic City. And I helped him. My fellow's moving to Florida the next year. And I made some money, so I went halves on a $5,000 horse with him when we moved to Florida. And that's my first experience with racing. And I learned a lot from him, too. But that was like a while before I really got into it.
How did that horse turn out?
Well, that horse had a couple seconds and a fourth, and they got claimed. And then we claimed another one that won about. Well, actually, we didn't claim him. He bought it from somebody. That horse won a couple of times, three, four times.
When did you finally realize that you wanted to be a trainer for a living?
Well, it was probably in the 80s after I met Fred. I really started going. When I first met Fred, I wasn't going early. I just go out when a horse ran once in a while, go to the barn. But then after that deal, when I really started going back to see him, maybe 87, 88, I really started getting into it. I started coming out early. When I say early then, it was 5:30. You know, to me, that's late now.
Yeah.
But I started coming out, started helping him around the barn. You know, I really enjoyed it all and saw the trainer side of it. I had never seen that. Well, I've seen it with St. Leon, but that's the first time I saw it was with him. And I had never seen the backside of the horse racing. I always saw up in the grandstand and this and that. I never really understood anything else about it.
What do you remember about that first time you walked onto the backside?
I thought this was the greatest thing, going back there, seeing all these horses, you know. Yeah, going back there, you know, and these were racehorses. I used to go to a farm and see some old pony or something you pet. But, you know, it was like so different. There was so much activity and so much buzz going on the backside.
Well, I'm sure it had to be exciting seeing a lot of the big-name trainers that you followed as a fan of the sport, and now all of a sudden you're sitting there working alongside them. That had to be kind of an interesting dynamic, too.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. Like, that's the truth. You know, you see these guys on TV, and they got all these great horses, you know, and then the next thing you know, you're sitting in the same room with them. And then you got a horse in a race competing with them.
Yeah, it's a little bit surreal.
When they were racing, first time I raced, like, against Pletcher, he had two horses in, and Petit Le Pen happened to run against him. She finished fifth. His horses, of course, finished first and third. And there was a couple other big-name trainers in there. I mean, it's kind of really exciting. I mean, it's like growing up all your life wanting to be a football player to actually being out a pro player.
Yeah.
I imagine. That's probably how it feels, how I feel.
Did you have a favorite trainer growing up that you would follow?
Well, I didn't really have a favorite. I mean, I'm like, at that time, you know, there was no really internet, and the only thing when you watch TV on NBC or something, the races, the big races. So I always used to follow kind of like the hot horse of that year. Like, I remember the first far back I remember was watching like Seattle Slew and then Affirmed Aladar. And then Buddy Delp when he was training Spectacular Bid. Those are like my biggest memories of back then. But now it's so easy to follow the sport.
Yeah. Was Spectacular Bid, was he the best horse that you ever saw in person, Spectacular Bid?
Well, to be honest, I was down here at Gulfstream. Fred had a horse down here, and Aladar was down here.
Yep.
Or I guess this was a few years. No, that wasn't. I'm sorry. No, it wasn't with Fred. That was with Norman St. Leon. You know, and I saw him, and they said they'd give me like a one of his shoes, you know, they just shot him. I don't know if it was or not, but that was kind of pretty exciting. Because I was always rooting for Aladar, even though Affirm beat him.
What's your most prized possession that you have now from Thoroughbred Racing, David?
Right now, it's just all the memories of the past.
Yeah.
And looking forward to the future.
What's your favorite memory?
Well, right now, since it happened, I guess right now that race I won with Petit Le Pen.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because I never really thought about it until you asked me.
What do you like? I'm always curious when trainers come on this program and they talk about dedicating their whole life to the sport in some form or fashion. What do you like most about training horses?
I just love coming out every day. I go out, watch them gallop. I come watch them walk. You know, just the way they're all just individuals. You know, and I mean, they're just like your children, really. I have a young kid, a couple older, and they're just like your children. They go there every day. They come out. They're happy to see you. They start pawing. They watch to give them some more hay or some extra feed. I mean, and just to see them out on the racetrack, you know, even when you go up to a cow and see them in the field and see the stallions running around and the babies running around, it's just an unbelievable sight.
Are any of your children interested in horse racing at all?
Yeah, they're interested in it, but not like cow, because they're like the two older ones are teenagers, so they kind of right now getting away from it. They're hanging out with their friends now. They're at that age where they go with their friend. And half the time they don't even talk to me. They're too busy. My youngest daughter, she's 2 and a half. She still loves. She loves coming out. Seeing. I mean, she doesn't understand it, but she loves the horses.
Were any of them there the other day when you won that first race?
Well, that's it. No, they weren't here. Because for them to be here all day. I had a horse in the first race and the last race. I just came right from the morning to come over here because it's such a long day. And they said, I will come. And I said, well, I got a good shot to come. And they said, you know, they just didn't want to come. It's just too long a day, especially to have a baby here all day.
Yeah. Would you want them to be trainers?
Yeah, I would love them all to be trainers.
Really?
I think there's Nate there if you, because if you have the love for the game and the love for the horses and the people, I can't wait. When I get up, I can't wait to get here. A lot of times I leave early. I mean, the help, they don't even start coming about 4:30, quarter to five, but I usually get there by four, sometimes earlier. I just can't wait to get here every morning.
Trainer David Rakoff on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, David, if one of your children did come to you and said, hey, I want to be a trainer, what advice are you going to give to them?
Well, I'm going to tell them they better learn the business from the bottom up, because that's where I feel you need to know everything about everything, what's going on. I mean, here I'm talking about maybe hot walk and grooms. I mean, I've watched the blacksmiths and talked to them and the vets, everybody. Anybody that comes in, even the dentist when they come, because I just don't want to see them do something. I want to learn the reasoning behind things. So I tell them to learn the game, try to learn it, and always keep your mind open because you're always going to learn. And don't be afraid to talk to other people and get their input, because if you think you know everything, you don't.
I mentioned at the top of the show that we launched a brand new show yesterday here on the network called Jock Talk, and Mike Smith was our Hall of Fame guest yesterday, and he told me during that show that you never stop learning in this game, and he is still learning after all these years and all those victories, and it sounds to me like you're kind of in that same boat.
Yeah, exactly, because you never know what's going to happen, what a horse is going to do, or, you know, a situation. I mean, so every day you always got to keep your mind open. You got to be able to adjust the situation. Like, so even for things like when you have a one-turn mile golf stream compared to two turns somewhere else, it's not the same. In a way that people got to ride different, and things just come up all the time. You never stop learning this game. And I guess that's also what makes it exciting. You're always learning, and you only keep your mind open and go with it. And like I said, I even talk to my grooms, and they're in them with the horse a lot every day. And they know a lot about the horse, and a lot of them come from, like South America or other countries. And they do things, and I'm always open. I always tell them, I'm open to hear what you, if you have suggestions, don't be afraid to talk to me. And I tell the jockeys the same thing. I'm the type I want to hear. I'll be mad at you if you don't tell me something. I want you to tell me.
David, there's people listening to this program right now that are probably just learning about you and getting to know your name a little bit. Tell me a little bit about your operation and how you handle your business so that if people do get in touch with you, they understand what you're all about.
Well, I'm open. Well, what we do is we take good care of our horses. You know, we got good help now, so I don't have to worry about them. But I'm constantly, I go up, watch my horses on the track. I watch them when they're back working. I walk around the barn many times. I check on them because you never know. One minute, the horse is standing there fine. The next minute, they get caught on something. It's happened to me a couple times already in the short time I've been training. But it's happened to Fred plenty of times, so, I mean, it's not something new to me. But I'm always keeping an eye. You always got to keep an eye on them. Like I said, they're like kids. They stand in there fine 1 minute to be in trouble the next. Always make sure I treat everybody good. I said I have an open communication with everybody. And I just try to be honest. If something going on, you know, like Fred was always like that. But that's why Fred and I got along so good. We're pretty honest. And, you know, when there's something little, I talk to owners what's going on. I even tell my grooms what my plans are for things, like if something's doing later. I let them know. I don't surprise them with anything.
Well, horse racing is obviously your number one passion. You can hear it when you talk about the sport and you talk about being around the horses. But outside of horse racing, David, what other things do you enjoy doing?
Oh, besides horse racing?
I enjoy...
That's a tough one. But I enjoy spending time with family. You know, like I said, I got young kids and little, teenagers. And I like spending time with them and taking them out places and doing things like that. Oh, and I love football. If you want to talk something, I'm a big football fan. Always have been.
NFL or college?
I love them both, but I always go. I used to go to the football games all the time, the Miami Dolphins. But since I started getting into training, you can't go. You always have horses running on Sunday. That's like the weekends. But now they're racing here Wednesday through Sunday. But yeah, but I liked all sports. But for some reason, when they started going on strike all the time, I kind of got away a little bit from basketball and baseball. But I know football went on strike, but I just never got away from it. I guess because probably college was still there.
So the Dolphins are your team?
Yeah, they're my team. Even when I lived up north, I come from South Jersey. I used to go watch the Eagles. And growing up, I was a Giants fan. But I still always, when they started the Dolphins, I always liked the Dolphins. I guess my grandma lived down here, and every time he used to come down to visit her.
Well, David, I can tell you this has been an enjoyable visit, and hearing your story has just been an awful lot of fun here for me today, and I know our listeners enjoyed it as well. Just about out of time, so I want to say thank you for taking the time to join me. Happy holidays, all the best, and I'll look forward to catching up with you when I get down to South Florida.
Yes, thanks. Yeah, I look forward to seeing you when you come down here.
David, appreciate it.
And happy holidays to you and everybody else.
Thank you, my friend. Good luck moving forward. David Rakoff,
thank you very much.
On Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Great story. And somebody who just loves this game found himself in that position unexpectedly this past October, but he's handling it very well. Somebody else who handles things very well is Michael Ferraro, and he's up in the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Stay right here. It's never too early to start talking about the Fasig Tipton Florida sale. Mark your calendar now for this premier two-year-old and training sale on Wednesday, March 4th, with the Under Tax Show taking place Monday, March 2nd. 2014 graduates of the Florida sale include Grade 1 hopeful winner, Competitive Edge.
Competitive Edge makes it 2 for 2 here at the spa. Competitive Edge, the winner by 4.5 lengths.
Grade 2 Saratoga Special Hero, I Spent It.
I Spent It, a dramatic winner of the Saratoga Special.
And Blofeld, winner of the Grade 2 Futurity.
Blofeld at the rail. Here comes Blofeld to win the Futurity.
With the 2014 sale boasting the highest average and second highest median of all two-year-old sales, the Fasig Tipton Florida sale is the place to be. Nominations are now being accepted. So log on to FasigTipton.com and nominate today.
For racing coverage from the inside out.
I still kicked away and I thought I really had it until the 16th pole. Amazing little horse.
International English events.
A clear round and under the time limit will get you into the jump off.
And hard-fought Western competition.
Here we go, guys. Let's help him. You bet.
Woo!
Tune in to HRTV. The network for horse sports. Online at hrtv.com.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreads.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Whether you're playing at home or on the go, let Daily Racing Form be your eyes and ears at the track with DRF Live. Every weekend, go to live.drf.com on your desktop or mobile device, and you'll get a direct line to DRF's on-track team all day long. Imagine a live stream of real-time insights straight from the track with information you can only get from being there. DRF's team brings you real-time information you can't get from any PPs. Mike Watchmaker's keys for a pick four at Belmont. Jay Privman from the paddock at Santa Anita. Mike Welsh trackside at Gulfstream. It's like having the whole DRF team on your own personal live feed, bringing you top plays, paddock observations, and track condition changes. DRF Live is filled with actionable wagering advice, helping you to find value as the odds are shifting. Visit live.drf.com this weekend for DRF Live. That's live.drf.com for DRF Live.
Hey everyone, Mike Penna here along with jockey Christina McManigal to tell you all about our exciting new show here on HRRN.
Every Tuesday night, you can join us for our brand new Jock Talk show from 6 to 7 Eastern.
Jock Talk? Sounds like that might be right up your alley, Christina.
You know it. Every Tuesday night, we'll visit with racing's top jockeys to give you a unique look into their lives, backgrounds, and careers.
It should be amazing, so join us every Tuesday night from 6 to 7 Eastern for Jock Talk, streaming live and podcast exclusively on our HRN website, horseracingradio.net.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Basic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And, of course, welcoming everybody joining us on Sirius 220, XM 206, and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, you can access podcasts of all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. Our brand new Jock Talk show, which debuted last night with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith. That podcast is up there. You can listen on iTunes or by going to our website, horseracingradio.net. Really fun visit in the first half of the program with David Rakoff, and now turning our attention to the opposite end of the spectrum. David saddling his first career winner last week down in Florida. Well, Michael Ferraro has saddled far more than one. He has started more than 12,000 horses in his career, which began in 1971. More than 3,000 of those starters have found their way to the winner's circle, and nearly 7,000 have hit the board. How about that? On November 12, 2014, he earned that career milestone of 3,000 victories, and he is nice enough to spend a little time with us here on Trainer Talk tonight. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And we're going to talk about that 3,000 milestone win plenty throughout the show. I'm sure that'll come up in conversation as we move throughout the program here. But for you, the racing business really has always been in your pedigree, hasn't it?
Well, you know, I've been actually training. I started training late, when I was about 29 years old, I think. I was kind of late in my life. I had other ambitions, but I always loved racing since I first went to a racetrack with my parents in California at Santa Anita. And I was about 8 years old, and I fell in love with the sport that Saturday. And it was like I liked it ever since. And, you know, I didn't actually get into the business until later on.
What grabbed you about the sport initially?
Well, you know, we moved to California, and my aunt and uncle had lived there, and they loved to go to the races and bet the horses, and they lived close to Santa Anita. So one Saturday, they asked my mother and father if they wanted to go see the races, and they said, sure. So they took me, and I was kind of like amazed by it, and it was a Saturday, and it just happened to be the Santa Anita Derby day. And the place was packed, and it was just overwhelming. And I was picking winners just off names off the program. And I said, oh, look at this horse, and look at this one. And I happened to pick the winner of the Santa Anita Derby that day, which I thought looked like one of my friends that I was going to school with. And the horse's name was Old Rockport, and my friend's name was Rocky. And I told my mother, I said, Ma, look at that horse. It looks just like Rocky. and he won, and he paid like, I think it was like 30 to 1 or 30-something to 1. And everybody tried to talk my father out of betting it. And he says, we've been doing good. So he bet a few, I don't know how much he bet on it, but it was a very small bet, maybe $4, $5. And the horse paid like 60-some dollars. And I was just in love with horse racing from that day on.
You know, I'm sure you remember a gentleman by the name of Harvey Pack in New York who used to host the replay shows there, yeah. Michael. And he would always say that once you pick your first winner, once you cash that first $2 ticket, we've got you for life. And that's what happened to me, and it sounds like you had the very same story.
Yeah, at 8 years old, yes. And I went, and then I took it on a little farther, though. We lived in Burbank, California, and we lived on the second floor, and on the first floor was a newsstand. And I'd come home from school, and I'd buy a local newspaper, and I'd go up in my house, and I would put the replay of the races on the radio at at 6 or 7 o'clock at night, and I'd pick out the horses' names, and I would see how I was doing. No form, just names. And my mother said, Michael, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And I said, man, I love it, you know. And I was 8 years old. And then I just kept on. I was doing other stuff. I liked football. I played football. And I started bodybuilding when I was like about 14 years old. And I made a little bit of a career out of bodybuilding. I've won Teenage Mr. America, and I won Mr. USA.
Really?
And I won Mr. North America. This was in my teens and early 20s. And I think it gave me a little bit of knowledge on training, too, because I trained myself for contests, and, you know, I was where I worked out most of my life. So I adapted a lot of the stuff that I did in bodybuilding to my horse training.
How so?
Well, you know, the muscle soreness and, after a race, I wouldn't do too much with a horse until a few days, and I would jog him a few days, and then, just to get the horse back and into, you know, just the way I felt when I used to work out. If I'd miss a week or two of working out, I knew that I couldn't go back heavy in training. I'd have to work my way back in, maybe a week of light training because you take off a week or two and your muscles just deteriorate very quickly. So I think I did a lot of my training according to the way I felt when I used to bodybuild.
Were you still following horse racing even at that point when you were competing?
Oh, yeah. I was still crazy about racing. We moved to Buffalo. My father had got a business in Buffalo, New York, and we were right near the Peace Bridge that was close to Fort Erie Racetrack. And when I became 16, able to drive, I used to drive over to the racetrack and go to the races at Fort Erie whenever they were open. And then I would even go to Greenwood and Woodbine, which was up in Toronto. And just as an avid race fan, I'd love to. And it was a lot about gambling, but it was about the sport. I used to really love the sport. I remember going to Greenwood one day and seeing a jockey by the name of Sandy Hawley. And I said, wow, I wonder what this girl is. I never heard of her before. She was an apprentice at the time. I thought it was a girl. And, and then he was really a super jock. He was really good. But, I followed racing right up until I started training and getting into the business myself.
Talking with trainer Michael Ferraro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So what eventually led you to make the decision to pursue a career in racing full-time?
Well, I loved horse racing. And my father had a business. It was a restaurant right maybe a half a mile from the Peace Bridge, which led into Canada, to Fort Erie, Canada. And there was a lot of horsemen that used to come over to the restaurant. And I worked for my father, and I started, talking to people about the racing business. And one of my better friends, who was from Buffalo, he was a bloodstock agent, and he had talked my father into buying a couple of horses, and he bought three or four cheap horses that, babies, they were 2 years old when he bought them.
Mm-hmm.
And my father said, why don't you love horse racing so much? Why don't you go out and watch them train horses and see how they do it? And that's how I got started.
Did I read somewhere that your dad at one point hired Angel Cordero Sr. as his trainer?
Yep. Angel was the first trainer that we had. Papa Cordero was the first trainer. He came up to Greenwood. And Greenwood was a racetrack up in Toronto. And I worked for him for a while, and I learned a lot from him. And then he left. He went back to New York, and then we had gotten a trainer from Canada. And we went to Blue Bonnets Racetrack in Montreal, which was, I don't think if they have thoroughbred racing there anymore. But this was a long time ago. And we were up there for a few months. And then the season was over with, and I was, debating on whether this was, going to be a career for me because, it was kind of tough. So then the next season started, and we got another trainer named Ted Williams, not the baseball player, but he was from Canada. And he was around my age. So he was very experienced. He was working around horses since he was a teenager, and he taught me a lot. And I hung out with him, and then he said, let's go to Finger Lakes. He said, these horses are, I don't think they're good enough for the circuit at Woodbine, Greenwood, and Fort Erie. So we went to Finger Lakes, and I've been there ever since.
Yeah, what do you like about being based at Finger Lakes, because you're somewhat of a big fish in a smaller pond?
Yeah, I enjoy being here. I like it's quiet. There's not a lot of traffic, and I know all the people. I've been here for so long. I know all the people here, and I like it. I've got a lot of good clients that I've been training for. So I just stay here. Every once in a while, I'll venture out to Aqueduct or Belmont or Saratoga. But I'm based mainly at Finger Lakes.
Were you ever tempted to move your operation to the bigger circuit over there at Aqueduct and Belmont?
I had thought of it a couple of times. Like, I did bring a couple of years. For a while, I was taking horses to New York during the winter when Finger Lakes was closed. And I'm not a New York person. I just don't like the traffic. And I just never got used to New York. And so I'd race there 2-3 months out of the year and then go come back to Finger Lakes. And I never was excited about going to New York.
Now, your son, Michael, is also a trainer. He saddled nearly 1,700 winners. Did you encourage him to get involved in the sport as he was growing up, or did you try to discourage him?
No, you know, he was a pretty good football player, and he wasn't really interested in racing when he was 16, 17. But, like, during the summertime, he would come to work for me, and we would work. And, you know, I told him, I said, if you like the sport, you know, I'll help you try to, you know, get some horses. But he wasn't interested until, you know, his college career was over with, and then he said, well, you know, maybe I'll get a few horses and start messing around. And I never pushed him, and I never discouraged him. But, you know, we worked together for a little while, and then he went on his own, and he's done pretty well. He's got his own team, what he does, and he, you know, he's an athlete too. You know, he works out, and he played a lot of football, and so he does pretty well.
Where did he play football?
Well, he went to high school here in Canandaigua. Mm-hmm. Played high school football at Canandaigua, and then he went to Nassau Community College. And he played a year or two there, and then he got a detached retina in his eye, and that just about quit right after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that he lists his name differently in the program as well so that people don't get confused with him and yourself.
Yeah, I think he goes by M. Anthony.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the idea. To sort of separate him from my name so he would have his own identity.
How closely do you follow his horses?
You know, I used to follow him real close. Now he's got so many, and he likes running all over the place. He runs a lot in New York. He goes to Woodbine. He's all over the place. He's a lot younger and has a lot more energy than I do. So I can't even keep up with his horses.
Talking with trainer Michael S. Ferraro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Michael, when you look back at your record and you talk about more than 3,000 wins now in your career, you've won a record, I guess, 18 training titles at Finger Lakes, if I'm not mistaken. When you hear those kind of numbers, especially considering the fact you got involved with this sport late, what goes through your mind?
Fortunate, lucky. You know, try to work hard at it. And when I see the results, it's just like I try hard to do the right thing by all the horses. And you know, I've been very lucky and successful in the business. And, like, the 3,000 wins was, like, never even entered my mind until one of the jockeys that I ride, David Lopez, he said to me, Mike, you know, you're almost at 3,000. I said, yeah, I didn't even realize that. How nonchalant it was. And then it really didn't become a big factor until the day I had won the 3,000th race. It was like, oh, my God, I got 3,000 wins. You know, it's like it hit me then. It was never a goal. It was just something that I guess I achieved and didn't realize it was that close.
Yeah, it's quite an accomplishment. 3,000 puts you in some pretty elite company, and it's interesting that you really had no idea. Maybe, Michael, that's for the best, because I've had a lot of trainers come on this program, and they'll tell me about getting close to a milestone, and they know about it, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, they can't buy a win, and it takes them 3-4 weeks before they finally get over that hump.
Yeah. Yeah, I think maybe I never thought about it. I never really considered it like in my everyday training routine. I would just go by, you know, hopefully I can win a couple of races today, you know, and that was it. And I would never be thinking about winning 3,000. But after it happened, you know, and everybody congratulated me and everything, I said, wow, this is not too bad.
Well, you're only the second.
I think there's one other trainer on at Finger Lakes that is, I think he's getting close to 4,000, is Chris Englehart.
Chris Englehart. Yeah, I was going to tell you that. Yeah. You're only the second trainer in Finger Lakes history to accomplish that. That's pretty impressive, my friend.
And that's funny. Chris and I are good friends because when I first started training, Chris was like about 16, 17 years old. And he started working for me, him and his wife. Well, he wasn't married at the time. She was his girlfriend. And we got to be really good friends throughout the years, and we've done really well.
I read a quote from Sal Iorio, who used to ride for you when he was still riding, and after you won your 3,000th, he said that you are the best horseman on the grounds. What does that mean to you?
Oh, that really means a lot, you know, because I do try to do the best thing I can and with my horses, and it's really a big compliment that other trainers and jockeys think of me that way.
You told me Sal had something in common with your mom as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, when Sal was an apprentice, I had some horses in Tampa, Florida, at the racetrack, and I seen his name, and I said, wow, my mom, that was her maiden name, Iorio. And I said, I think I'm going to ride this kid. He seems like he's got, you know, a nice career coming around. So I put him on a couple of horses, and he went right off the bat for me. And we got to be friends, and, you know, the name was common, but no relation. There was no family ties. It was just the name. But we've been friends ever since, and that was a long time ago.
You know, when you think back on those 3,000 wins, there's one that I know is probably going to stand out even more than most, and that's a horse by the name of Fio Rito, who was the New York Horse of the Year in 1980 and 1981, became the first New York bred to win a Grade 1 race when he won the Whitney at Saratoga in 1981. That had to be a very special time for you.
That's probably my biggest, biggest thrill of my racing career. 3,000 wins, but I can remember just about every win that Fiorito had won, and the Whitney in particular was the most exciting.
Yeah, take me back to that day. How tough was that field?
Well, in the day, it was pretty tough. There was the favorite was Winter's Tale, who was 6-5. There was a horse by the name of Ring of Light that Jose Martin trained, Pancho Martin, and Blue Ensign. There was some nice named horses in there. I can't remember them all, but every one of those horses took a shot at Fiorito. He broke in front, and there was like three or four horses that took cracks at him, and I thought any time now he's going to quit, and he just kept on running. And then at the top of the stretch, Winter's Tail started making his move. And I said, oh, God, just hang on for a second. And he wouldn't let that horse go by him. Won by a neck.
Yeah, quite a horse. And not only is he a two-time New York Horse of the Year, but a three-time Finger Lakes Horse of the Year. And I noticed that he was inducted into the Finger Lakes Hall of Fame. And as somebody who's been based there for his whole career, that has to be something that you hold very dear to your heart.
Oh, yeah, I do. I'll tell you, that horse has so many different stories. From the day that he was actually, the owner had bought him, Mr. Lucchesi, had bought the mare and foal at a sale that he had at his farm. And he bought the horse not really wanting the mare. He bought her just to, I think he said, to raise the price. You know, he just bid on her, and he said, I got stuck with this mare. And here comes the foal is Fiorito, and he brought him over to me when he was a two-year-old, And he says, Mike, this is our New York Futurity winner. And I swear to God, I looked at the horse and I said, Ray, I said, we used to run for $1,500 claimers in those days. I said, Ray, this horse would be lucky to break its maiden for $1,500. That was my first observation of the horse looking at him. I said, oh, my God, he didn't look like much of a horse at that time. And, boy, he really surprised me.
Yeah, what did Ray say to you after he won the Whitney?
Well, you know, it was Ray's idea to run him in the Whitney. I was always looking for their spot. I was always looking for, you know, easier races. When he said we're going to go in the Whitney, I said, Ray, you think that's a smart idea? He said, yeah, he loves Saratoga. You know, the horse virtually won almost every race at Saratoga. I think he got beat once. He was second once. He had like four wins and a second out of five starts there. I'm pretty sure that was his record there. And he says he loves the racetrack. He loves Saratoga. So I said, all right, let's do it. So the day of the entry, Lenny Hale, with the racing secretary, called me.
Wow.
And says, I've got a New York bred race, allowance race. You want to put Fiorito in there. He says it'll go with a short field. And I'm thinking to myself, why, that would be an easy spot for him. So I said, let me call you back. I called up Mr. Lisesti and I said, Ray, there's a allowance race, a New York bred allowance race. He said, Mike, you only live once. I want to try this horse in the Whitney. I said, okay, Ray. And that was it. So I give him all the credit. I give Mr. Lisesti all the credit, and because he's the one that wanted to run there. And I had a little doubt in my mind because of the caliber of horses that were in there. I said, nah, I don't know. I said, I know he won't embarrass us, but I said, I would sure like to win that New York bred allowance race.
Wow.
So, but he won the Whitney, and that was the biggest thrill of my racing career.
Yeah, how much does that make you want to get back to that level and to have another horse like Fiorito?
Oh, you know, that horse sort of like snuck up on me. And I'm always looking for that one horse that, you know, I've had some nice horses, but he you know, he had it all. And, you know, here at Finger Lakes, they have to sneak up on you because you're not going to get the best bred horses in the world. And he wasn't very well bred. And they either have to be a freak of nature, you know, being bred not as well as some of the horses that compete in those grade ones. But I've had some nice horses, but nowhere near the caliber he was. And, of course, I would love to get another one or two like him before my career is over with, but they're hard to come by.
Trainer Michael Ferraro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fezzik Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Michael, only about a minute left before we have to wrap things up, but I'll end it by asking you, the key to success in training horses is?
Well, I try to be consistent. I try to be consistent in my training, my feeding program. I try to do the same thing every day. Not the same thing with every horse. Every horse I treat as an individual. And I think, you know, just training, the consistency of training, and knowing what kind of horse you have, I think really helps.
Well, Michael, you've done it very well for a very long time. Congratulations on win number 3,000. Thank you so much for being here on Trainer Talk tonight. It was great to hear your story. Happy holidays to you and the entire family, and we'll look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
I appreciate it.
Michael Ferraro here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fezzik Tipton. Again, if you missed any portion of the show, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available of this show and every Trainer Talk show. As a matter of fact, all of our shows podcast for you on our website and, of course, on iTunes. Don't forget, tomorrow night, 6 to 7 Eastern, the Brisnet.com call-in show. and Wednesday night, our Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. Excuse me, Friday night, 6 to 7, our Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. We'll get you ready for the big races this weekend. My thanks to David Rakoff and to Michael Ferraro. For my producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.